Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Hockey Strength Podcast. Thanks for joining us here today on episode 45. My name is Brian Sippets. I'm your host for today. So I've been listening to a whole lot of podcasts lately, and I find myself sort of tuning out or fast-forwarding through the parts that are the same in every podcast. I know podcast hosts mean well, but I think I'm going to learn from that. And I'm just going to say, for those of you who aren't familiar with HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, it exists. It's a thing. Lots of great information about hockey players. You can try it for just a buck if you're interested in just checking it out. And actually today it's going to help out quite a bit because you'll get to see the presentation that we're talking about from our guest today, Tina Murray, who is the Director of Sports Performance at University of Louisville. She is awesome, and she did an awesome presentation at Perform Better in Chicago. So we've got a PDF of that presentation up on the site. You can check that out and sort of follow along, get a little bit more of a visual reference as we are talking to Tina. So let's keep it short here in the beginning, and we're going to go ahead and get on the phone with our guest today, Tina Murray, Director of Sports Performance at the University of Louisville. Enjoy, guys. All right. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us. I am on the phone today with Tina Murray. Tina is the Director of Sports Performance at the University of Louisville, who actually does not have a Division I hockey team, but Tina is making big strides in research on the hockey end of things and also, you know, collecting data from other sports. So Tina, thank you so much for sticking with us through some scheduling difficulty and joining me today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So we met briefly at Perform Better Chicago this past summer. And to be honest, I popped in on your presentation there, not really understanding what it was all about, but I was curious, so I wanted to check it out. And it ended up being, you know, a total blockbuster for me and you talking about the things that you do there at Louisville. But I want to get to that in a little bit. But first, you know, even though you are in a place where there's not a Division I hockey team, you've got a pretty extensive background in hockey. Talk about your background with USA Hockey and the work you're doing now that's benefiting hockey players.
Sure. Well, I'm a Canadian and come from a small town in the Ottawa Valley where people live and breathe hockey. I grew up playing hockey, and it's certainly a passion of mine. So I think in my 20 years in strength and conditioning and working in this industry, I've always had my hand in hockey to some extent, certainly at certain times more than others, but really passionate about the game and staying on top of what's happening in the game. And I would say one of the things that I have probably am most proud of and would speak about in particular would be the 4 years with USA Hockey, 2006 to 2010. Was brought on board as the Director of Strength and Conditioning for the women's national team, but also the U18 team, and did a lot of grassroots work with their coach education program and helping to develop some of the LTAD stuff that's pretty prevalent now. We had 4 years with pretty good success leading into the Vancouver Games, where we, finished with a silver medal there. But overall a great experience and gave me an opportunity to meet some people and continue to do some things with, some people in USA Hockey that I think is making an impact on just our ability to develop better athletes and, really understand the profile on the female athlete side, the profile of an elite athlete for that sport and what some of the specific needs or targets need to be in terms of developing elite players.
Yeah, so talk about that. I mean, you've published papers on this idea of understanding what the performance characteristics are, and, in particular, female ice hockey players and male ice hockey players, but, of particular interest to you is the female population. You know, there's certain challenges, definitely. I know you're collecting a lot of data there, and have been doing so for a while. So what are you finding about the characteristics of female ice hockey players that are allowing them to be elite players?
Sure. Well, I can tell you this started actually with looking at the NHL Combine. I was doing some consulting with a couple NHL teams and had a chance to go to the Combine a few years back in the early 2000s. And you know, was really curious about how much the off-ice performance testing correlated with draft status. And so, you know, if a guy performs well at the combine, does that really influence in any way, shape, or form where he ends up being drafted? And so we ran some data. We took 4 years of combine data, ran some stats on it, and that sort of led me to continue along that line of thinking in terms of, all right, how much does the off-ice stuff that we do, off-ice testing in particular, how much does it really relate to on-ice performance and, you know, which players end up being more successful on the ice? So we look at different metrics around strength and power and conditioning in particular. We look at body composition profiles on the female athlete side and trying to get a better understanding of how to advise and motivate some of the players off of the ice. I can tell you when I started with USA Hockey in 2006, once we had sort of created these standards, and I created some of them based on just female athlete data in general, not hockey specifically, but looking at all the data I'd collected over the years from elite collegiate athletes, from soccer to field hockey to lacrosse to basketball and volleyball, what did, you know, the elite players look like? And we created, you know, this index. And when we first started in 2006, we had very, very few of our pool, very few of the players in our USA Hockey pool that even hit our minimum standard, a bronze standard. And, you know, by 2009, all of the players in the pre-Olympic tour, all the players that were chosen to the Olympic roster, we had, you know, a minimum of a silver standing in each of the performance tests that we really placed quite a bit of emphasis on. So there's significant progress over time, and we feel like just the structure that we created around and the standards that we set really helped to drive the, you know, drive off-ice performance and the motivation off-ice.
That's interesting. So with the kind of the structure of the national program, aside from the NTDP, where the players are together all year, how do you implement something like that when you have players that are, you know, playing in all areas of the country? You see them just a couple times a year. I mean, that's sort of the challenge for national programs at almost every level, except for the NTDP. How do you implement something like that and make sure that they're getting training needs met? Are you talking to individual coaches? Are you just communicating with the individual players? How does that work?
Yeah, the players knew that they were going to be tested every time they came into a camp. So it was typically 3 to 4 times a year that we did comprehensive off-ice testing, and sometimes usually twice a year on-ice testing as well from a speed, agility, and conditioning standpoint. And so we designed their programming for them when they were not with us, you know, individualized that according to their needs, and obviously trying to prepare them for the testing when we did come together in June and in August and in December. And we did communicate for the players that were still in collegiate programs. We did communicate with the strength coaches in those programs and tried to work with them to understand the team programs that were being prescribed within their team setting, but then also complementing that appropriately with what we felt they needed extra work or extra time on.
Gotcha. Yeah, and there's definitely very qualified coaches out there that can help you out with that. So I'm sure you have good relationships with those guys as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great. So I think, you know, I think a lot of the work you're doing with hockey is sort of a little bit under the radar. And I know you're using technology, especially, you know, there at school. I know Justin Rothling-Shepherd, who uses more than I really would fully understand is a former, you know, a former coach of yours, and imagine he picked up a lot of what he's doing from you. So I can imagine there's a lot of monitoring and data collection going on there at the school. Are you using hockey players at all for that, or are you mainly using the NCAA sports?
Yeah, we are. We're using, you know, we've got 21 teams here that we work with. Unfortunately, ice hockey is not one of them. So we're doing quite a bit of work on the analytics front. We are really trying to be as data-driven as we can be with our decision-making. We're fortunate to have the resources here to be able to use some, you know, some of the technologies that are out there.
I think we've talked about, you know, monitoring a lot on this show, especially, and it is definitely something that we're trying to catch people up on and make people aware of. You know, there's obviously a lot of limitations when you're not dealing with a university budget and for whatever that is. But, you know, one thing I really wanted to talk to you about today is, I mentioned earlier your presentation at Perform Better over the summer. Really, like I said, it was sort of a black box for me. I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but you know, you called it the performance code, and basically getting into what you do there at Louisville that helps you have a successful strength and conditioning program. You know, you as the director of that program. So, you know, basically it boiled down to, you know, culture. You know, how you create your culture. The C for code is culture. O would be operating systems. Where are we? D for data driven. And what was the E?
E was execution.
Execution, right. Okay. So,
right.
Yeah, I guess mainly as a business person, you know, I have my own business. I'm a former athlete. I'm also a coach. So, you know, the creation of culture really hits home with me. And is sort of something that's really, really interesting for me and should be interesting to any coach, any manager, any teacher, any professional, any business owner, because it's such a big thing. Talk a little bit about what's important to your culture and what you've put in place there to make sure that you're managing the culture and make sure that the culture sort of drives itself.
Sure. I agree with you completely. Culture is everything. It's first and foremost on my list as a leader. And everything we do here is dictated by our culture and our core values. I think the number one thing I would say is when I came from UConn to the University of Louisville 12 years ago, I was really focused on trying to build a great program. And it wasn't about me as a strength coach trying to be a great strength coach and trying to, you know, just work with three or four teams and make sure those teams are being successful. But I really took the opportunity to build a program and lead the development of a program pretty seriously and only hired people that were really interested in working as a team. So we're very unique compared to most collegiate programs here in that we don't have a staff of coaches that, you know, wear the same logo and wear the same shirt and just take care of their respective teams. Even though we have, you know, I have 12 people on my staff and everybody has different teams that they're the primary performance coach with, everything we do here, we do as a team. And so our core values are, I mean, we say it's written on the wall, our mission and our motto and our number one core value is we build athletes and prepare champions for sport and for life. And the second core value is we do it as a team. And so every time we make a decision, whether it's a methodology and a decision related to programming, whether it's a decision related to our facility or equipment, whether it's a decision related to hiring someone new, bringing on a new intern, all of those decisions are made with my full-time staff, my entire full-time staff. So our organizational structure, we're completely flat. Everybody has decision-making power. Everybody's empowered to be a leader in different areas of our program and our operating system. And, you know, we're very, very focused on creating a championship culture within our environment. And everything we do is about building athletes and preparing champions. I think where I see a lot of people get off track is they talk about culture, but there's not alignment between who they say they are and how they do what they do. And so we're really focused on making sure that our why aligns with our how and that we're consistent in how we do things. So regardless of the team that we're working with, and as I mentioned, we have 21 teams, about 500 athletes that we take care of here, we have a very systematic approach. We have a lot of consistency. We have expertise in different areas, and we share our expertise. So we use a team of teams approach, which means that I have a small team within my staff that is our power team. I have a small team that's my ESD or energy systems team. I have a small team that's my analytics team. And we have six of these teams within our larger team. And they drive the decision-making, refine the methodologies, lead the charge as it relates to those areas. And so, again, everybody's very empowered. Everybody shares responsibility for everything because, again, it's not like I'm the director and I just, you know, assign teams and tell people what to do and then just tell them to take care of their teams, which I know is what happens oftentimes. We collectively sit down at the end of the year and review our injury data, review our performance data, evaluate what went well, what did not go well. And, you know, the equipment decisions, technology decisions, everything, again, leads back to our methodology, which is driven top down from the culture and the mission.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to that, you know, you have six mini teams that tackle different topics that come up. You have the power team and the analytics team and things like that. I think that's just beyond brilliant. I mean, to have that kind of expertise, you know, so you yourself as a director may not be able to know as much about every single subject as a small team would be that's focused on that. So to put that in the hands of your team is great. I mean, that honestly, that's like a big ego check probably for a lot of people. But I think it's so useful in that a smaller team of people who are focusing on a certain thing can know more and be so much more effective than a single person who would make the final call themselves. Is that what you found?
Absolutely. And I think we were already living this way before I read the book Team of Teams. But after reading the book Team of Teams, which I would recommend highly, it solidified our approach and it led to just sort of refining the organizational structure around some of these key areas. And, you know, any leader, I think our number one job is to build leaders, and I'm really committed to building leaders here and empowering my staff. I want to see them all be incredibly successful. So we have created a learning environment. We've created a really empowered culture where people want to get better, and people are highly motivated to get better, and they know if they're not highly motivated to get better, then they're not, you know, we don't want them here. And so it's created the right kind of environment for our staff, but it's also created a great environment for our interns. It's created a great environment for our student athletes. And I would say that the culture we've created here in our facility and within our program has really now begun to influence many of our coaching staff and many of the programs we work with. And, you know, I think we know this is the way that people want to work nowadays. You know, the old ego-driven leader model, it doesn't work with the new millennials. It doesn't work with the way people want to operate at work. And so I have found that it's been very, very conducive to creating more engagement, more intentional work, more meaningful conversations. It's really, you know, positively impacted what we do. But again, it's connected to our culture. It's connected to our value system and who we are. And it's just sort of served to enhance that.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I think that's the goal of any leader, of any director, is to really empower the people that are with them. And you end up seeing much, much better results in that way. You mentioned Team of Teams as a book, and I know there were a couple other book references, not the least of which was Legacy. I mean, that's, to me, I read that in like a day and a half and just couldn't put it down. And it, like, I thought about it for the next, you know, 2 weeks, and I still reference that book. So what are some other books that have really influenced you as a director?
Sure. Legacy is outstanding. You know, leave the jersey better than you found it is a great line. And it's a line we use all the time with our teams and even internally. I would highly recommend it if you're interested in culture and just getting some tips and ideas on how to improve the culture wherever you are. The other book that really shaped my talk at the Perform Better Summit this summer was The Checklist Manifesto. And you know, I'm a pretty structured person anyway, and we have a pretty solid operating system that's systems-driven or systems-based. But the Checklist Manifesto, you know, really simplifies things by promoting the use of checklists. And it's been proven in medicine and in a number of different industries that if you can create simple checklists for your team, for your staff, for your athletes, it really eliminates human error, and it eliminates just the tendency sometimes to be lazy or the tendency sometimes just to forget. You know, we get caught up in doing so many things in a day and in a week, and we're pulled in different directions. But sometimes, you know, just remembering to weigh our athletes in is one of the most important things, or just remembering to double check wellness surveys and take a close look at a couple key metrics within those is a really important thing. You know, so the Checklist Manifesto, the how, is critical to how well we're able to execute and deliver to our teams, to our coaches, and to our athletes. You know, I talked about Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why. And that's one that we read a few years ago. And, you know, there's no doubt we all need to be very, very clear about our why and our mission, our values as it relates to the why. But I think those of us that work in this industry, we're pretty altruistic people. We're pretty, you know, we're in it for the right reasons. We really care about making an impact, not just on performance, but on the lives of the athletes we work with. And so I don't think that we have in our world as many issues with why as, let's say, corporate America or other industries. But I do think the how is where we struggle sometimes. You know, we look at the injury rates that continue to be an issue across the sports that we work with. And, you know, I think sometimes it comes down to us being smarter about the details and being more consistent with the details and being more structured and systems-based with the things that we know from the literature and that we know from experience. So I've really put an emphasis on how we do things and making sure that we are being consistent with that, and we are using more checklists than ever. So we have a long-term athlete development model here. We take a very systematic approach to how we develop our athletes. But rather than just talking about the things that we're going to do in block zero, we actually now have a block zero checklist. We have a block one checklist. We have a block two checklist. So as we move our athletes along this developmental continuum, we're very, very clear, and we have these checklists to guide our decision-making with our programming. And even doing, you know, I created a checklist for my staff this year that just related to before the start of the year, sort of your preseason coaches checklist. Here are the things that you have to make sure you communicate with your head sport coach before the first day of workouts, you know, as it related to supplements and as it related to some of the technology we were using and how that was going to be implemented, how the coach wanted to see the information we were collecting for them. How does the coach like to see visually information from us? Do they prefer pie charts? Do they prefer bar graphs? How do they want us to present the information to them? So, you know, just really drilling down on some of the details so that hopefully the impact of the work that we're doing is more successful and more significant.
Well, that's just it too. I mean, having an operating system, you know, businesses, I'm learning now that you know, the system runs the business, or the system runs the what you do on a daily basis. And I think what happens a lot is I bet there are a lot of directors and coaches and managers who have meetings about what they read in Legacy, or have meetings about what they should be doing and what their mission is and what their common purpose is and all those things. But then without the operating system, without the systems in place, it remains in that meeting and everybody goes back to their daily lives. So I think that's really a great idea and something to learn from, that you actually have that operating system in place that takes what you're learning about your culture and puts it into practice out on the floor.
Yes, exactly. The alignment again. So your mission drives your methodology. Your methodology drives your personnel and who you're hiring and what roles you're hiring them into. So I don't go out and hire a strength coach to work with a team. I don't say, hey, okay, I've got field hockey and lacrosse. I need to find somebody that has experience with field hockey and lacrosse. I know a lot of people hire that way, but I don't. I'm going out and I'm looking for somebody who fits a very clear role on our team and that brings specific things to the table that will elevate the overall team, but certainly has expertise in key areas that will influence the development of the athletes on those sports. And so again, the alignment between the culture, the methodology, the personnel, the decisions related to equipment and technology, and so on down the list. I think we now in our world have a tendency also to want the next greatest toy, or to really, you know, think that this tool or this technology is the answer, but it may not fit into our operating system. It may not really fit into our methodology, and it may not really fit into our personnel, the people that we have available, you know, on our staff to manage it. And so again, it's just getting clear on the big stuff first, which is the culture and the values and the mission, and then making sure there's alignment in every layer of what you do. So the training principles don't come first. The overall methodology comes first as it relates to programming. once the methodology, you know, your sort of system is clear, then you get into the principles, the more specific principles and some of the more specific details of that.
Man, that's awesome stuff. Tina, I want to come work with you there. Can I come work with you?
Oh, I don't know about that. You might want to talk to my staff first. You might want to talk to them first.
Good answer. All right. I really appreciate you taking time. I think, you know, we didn't talk any sets and reps today, but it's really important stuff that I think can really, should really guide most coaches, you know, whether you're in a private facility or, you know, in a big university. I think everybody has something to learn from this, and it all starts with, you know, it all starts with, like you said, that alignment and making sure that what you say translates into action out on the floor and everything's in alignment there. So really great stuff, Tina. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot for taking the time to join us today.
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks, Brian.
All right, guys, that's going to wrap up episode 45 of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today. And also thank you to Tina Murray for joining us at what is probably the busiest time of year for her, as all the students are getting back to school and the athletic programs are getting going. So we really appreciate the information, and thank you very much for the presentation. That's going to be a great help for our listeners. So remember to check out our Twitter feed and Facebook as well. We're pretty active. Lots of great information for you guys. I know I learn something every day, especially when Devin posts some of the things that he digs up. So make sure to check it out. Like us on Facebook and Twitter. You're going to get a ton of value out of it. Thank you again for listening. My name is Brian Sippets. Until next time, be sure to train smart and check out HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, the world's greatest resource for training hockey players. We'll talk to you next time.